is Stephanie Rubel with the Stanford Book Salon. I'd like to welcome all of our listeners and readers back after our summer break and introduce you to our first selection for the 2014-2015 Book Salon season, A Constellation of Vital Phenomena. I'm sitting here with both author and Book Salon host Anthony Mara. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great. Anthony is currently a Jones Lecturer in Fiction at Stanford University, holds an MFA from the Iowa Writers' Workshop, and is a former Stegner Fellow. In 2010, his short story Chechnya won a 2010 Pushcart Prize and the 2010 Narrative Prize. He was one of the first foreign tourists to visit the post-war Republic of Chechnya and was interviewed on three Chechen television programs as a result. His first novel, A Constellation of Vital Phenomena, was published in May 2013 and will be translated into over a dozen languages. It has won the National Book Critics Circle's inaugural John Leonard Prize and the Anisfield Wolf Book Award in Fiction, as well as the inaugural Carla Furstenberg Cohen Fiction Award. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Great. So can you talk to us about why you wrote this book?
Yeah, I initially began thinking of Chechnya when I was a college student. I studied in St. Petersburg, Russia, and I lived down the street from a Russian military cadet academy. Every day I'd see these 16, 17-year-old kids marching up and down the street in military formation, and they would wear these powder blue uniforms with peaked caps, and they looked very, very smartly dressed. And in their marching, they would walk past the local metro station. And across the street at the metro station itself, Russian veterans of the recent Chechen wars would congregate to ask commuters for spare change. And these young men were just a few years older than the cadets. And they also wore their uniforms. Theirs weren't nearly as well maintained. Theirs weren't nearly as clean and pressed. Some of their trousers were hemmed because they had lost their legs in the war. And you would see these kids looking across the street at these veterans, and these veterans looking back at these kids, and it just seemed like this profound moment where each group was looking into the future, and the other was looking into the past, and it was, you know, horrifying and touching all at the same time, and it seemed like there was something much greater than simply time and a strip of asphalt that was separating these two groups of young men, and that was Chechnya, of course. And so initially I began reading about Chechnya just to fill in the gaps in my understanding of the situation. Like most Americans, Chechnya really was no more than a far-flung synonym for terror and poverty. But the more I began reading about it and its remarkably rich culture and history, the more fascinating it became. Chechnya is a place that for several centuries has been a thorn in the side of Russia's imperial ambitions. And it's been a place that writers have turned to again and again: Tolstoy, Lermontov, Pushkin, the real giants of the golden age of Russian literature all spent time in Chechnya and wrote about it. And as I was reading about the recent conflict in Chechnya in the 90s and early 2000s, I found myself just profoundly moved by stories of ordinary civilians, people who were not overly political, who weren't overly religious, who really were trapped between the rebels and the occupiers, two equally brutal bands of thugs. And the stories of how they survived and how they maintained some vestige of their humanity despite the geopolitical forces that might have easily stripped them of it really spoke to me. And I think that for all the history and journalistic accounts you can read, there's nothing quite like a novel that allows you to understand what it really was like to exist in a particular place and time. A good novel, I think, is a tunnel that can drop you straight through the center of the earth, and you emerge on the other side next to people you'd never otherwise meet. And I began trying to find a novel that was either written in English or translated into English that was set in Chechnya over the last several decades. And I was really shocked to discover that none were available. None had been written. And so I came to write the novel more as a reader than a writer. It was a book that I wanted to find on the bookshelf of the Stanford University bookstore, but it wasn't there yet.
Thanks so much for sharing that experience. It sounds really remarkable. And I haven't quite finished the book yet, but reading through it, you can really see the reflection of what you were just describing in the just everyday lives of the people there. Thank you.
Yeah.
So what issues from your book can you single out that our readers might find interesting to discuss?
Well, I think partially it's probably not so much the place of the writer to really point those things out, but for the sake of this, we will. I think that one of the ideas I was really interested in is in exploring in the book is how people make moral choices in situations where the apparatus of civilization that that tends to limit our more violent impulses, when that's stripped away. One of the characters at one point in the novel comments that in a land without law, there's no crime. And that's not something that I think I personally agree with. But the idea of how do we make moral choices when the repercussions of those choices are perhaps far more far-reaching, in the sense that in a war-torn country, ethical choice becomes magnetized, and something that, you know, the kind of maybe failure of character that in a place like America might manifest itself in nothing more than cheating on a test might in a place like Chechnya result in informing on your neighbors. How do these characters deal with that? How do we go about living good lives when the moral compass has been recalibrated to point towards survival? And the notion of sacrifice is woven throughout the book, both what we're willing to sacrifice of ourselves and what sacrifices we're willing to endure on the behalf of others. Those are all some of the ethical questions that might be fodder for discussion. But also, I think the idea of what it's like to live in a geopolitically fraught situation. We, you know, me speaking personally as an American, I feel, you know, enormously blessed to live in a place where the only time we really experience that kind of violence is on the television screen, is in newspapers. You know, we haven't had a war fought on our soil in 150 years. Yet as a country, we're, you know, nearly always engaged in a war. And I think that seeing how the impact of political choices sort of manifest themselves at the far arc of power and policy at that point, you know, in the distant hinterlands of our own political system, how those touch down and affect the lives of the individual.
I can't wait to get into our discussion, because it sounds like there's a lot to cover, and obviously people are going to feel pretty strongly about this. So thanks for laying that out for us. Will you talk to us about what your favorite part of the book is and why you included it?
Yeah, I think maybe one's favorite part of a book changes over time. At one point, my favorite part was sort of anything with Sonia, who as a character is this very sort of tough-minded and unsentimental and fiercely ambitious surgeon who, as she's had to be to rise to the peak of her profession in a highly stratified and patriarchal society. For a while, Ramzan's section, who is, he's an informer and in many ways the sort of bad guy of the book, he gets a 60-page chapter right in the middle of the novel that sort of complicates our understanding of him and makes him much more sympathetic. But over the last year or so, I think my favorite sections have been with Hassan, who is an elderly historian, and he has spent his entire professional life trying to write this epic 3,000-page history of Chechnya. And every time he comes close to finishing, the book, a shift in the political winds back in Moscow, require him to revise the entire book in order to conform with the prevailing ideology of the day. So he spends his entire life revising history in this weird sort of pantomime of the way the government is similarly revising the past. And he has a son. His son is Ramzan, this informer. And Hassan is deeply ashamed to have this informer as a son. And yet this son is the only family he has. And I think one of the true joys maybe of writing is trying to imagine yourself into a situation that's so far beyond your own experience. What is it like to live as a 79-year-old man in a place like Chechnya, where your only family member is doing this thing that that so shames you? How do you deal with that? What is the next the proper course of action for you to take? And trying to imagine my way into that situation, I feel like it in turn sort of expanded my own sense of the world around me, that that you come back to, or I come back to you know, my apartment in Oakland with my sense of the wider world a bit more mysterious and more complicated.
Yeah, I love the characters in your book. Just everyone has so much depth to who they are and what makes them tick and move through the story. It's great. Yeah. So before we end, I want to remind all of our listeners and readers that we're having our only live in-person event that we hold every year, this year with Anthony, and we're scheduled for Sunday, October 26th from 1 to 2:15 back here on the farm. You can visit our Book Salon website for more details, and we'll be webcasting it and posting it at a later date. Anthony, thanks so much for joining us today and introducing us to a constellation of vital phenomena.
Thanks for having me, and I'm looking forward to being back.
Awesome. Very good. Cool.